This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
The night sky for November 2014. Well, as it gets an hour or so after sunset, the sky's beautifully dark and hopefully sometimes clear. The square of Pegasus is over in the south, four stars making up the square of the winged horse, that is upside down, and some stars to its lower right form in fact the head and the mane. Just off the edge of perhaps the head of the horse is a nice globular cluster called M15, which one might pick up with a reasonable pair of binoculars on a dark night or a telescope. And starting at the top left-hand side of the square, a star called Alpharat, which actually is Alpha Andromedae, there's a nice way of finding M31, the great galaxy in Andromeda. And on the night sky page, I have a chart to show you how to do that. Above, and almost overhead in fact, is the W-shaped constellation of Cassiopeia. And in fact, that gives you another way of finding Andromeda. The upper right stars, the three brighter ones in fact, form a little V. And if you follow that V downwards, that will also bring you to where Andromeda is. To the lower left of Pegasus is the constellation of Pisces. To be honest, none of the stars there are very bright. It's not really picked up terribly well. And over to the left again, we have Aries, the ram. But what will be obvious as the evening draws on is the lovely region around Orion and Taurus. Over towards the east in the south, by around midnight, you'll see that lovely little open cluster of stars called the Pleiades, the Seven Sisters. Down to its lower left is another cluster called the Hyades. There's one very red-orange star, much brighter than the other stars. It's actually Aldebaran. It's nothing to do with the cluster at all. It just happens to lie in the same direction about half the way away. To its lower left, we have, of course, Orion the Hunter. And that's actually looking beautiful in the early hours of the morning now when it's risen and somewhat towards the south. It has three stars in a line forming its belt, and they point up to the right towards Aldebaran and to the brightest star we see in the northern heavens, Sirius. The lower right, as we look at it, of Orion, at the lower right, is the star Rigel, a blue giant. And to the upper left is a red giant star, Betelgeuse. It's very large. It's about the size in diameter of the orbit of Jupiter. And that's one star that sometime in the future, we don't know when, is going to explode and become a supernova. Coming down from Cassiopeia high overhead, along, in fact, the plane of the Milky Way, and if it's really dark, you might spot that, you come to Perseus. Two nice things in Perseus. First of all, between Cassiopeia and Mirfak is the double cluster, two lovely open clusters close together, a lovely sight in a small telescope. A star coming down, in fact, towards Aries is called Algol, sometimes called the demon star, because every so often it winks. It's actually an orbiting double star, one star going round the other, and sometimes the light of the brighter star is occulted by the less bright, and the brightness drops quite a significant amount. Carrying on beyond Perseus is a bright yellow star. It's called Capella, and it's in the constellation of Auriga. Again, that's along the plane of the Milky Way, which is where we find these open clusters. And there are three very prominent open clusters in Auriga. Starting from the Capella end, shall we say, is M38, then M36, and finally M37. So it's a very rich part of the Milky Way to look at. And carrying down, just rising in the east, is the constellation of Gemini with its two bright stars, Castor and Pollux. And just at the lower right leg, or the foot, shall we say, of Castor, one of the heavenly twins, is another nice open cluster called M35. So quite a lot to look at in the heavens this month. Well, what about the planets? Jupiter is beginning its apparition, really. Shiny at magnitude minus 2.1, it's now rising at about 11:30 as November begins. It's around 10 degrees up and to the right of the star Regulus in Leo the Lion. Its motion eastwards across the sky is slowing. By the end of the month, it rises well over an hour earlier at about 9:40 UT, and with a slight increase in magnitude to minus 2.3. It's due south and so highest in the sky at an elevation of 53 degrees, which isn't bad, at around 05:30 UT, some 2 hours before sunrise. I saw it absolutely beautifully in the morning sky, the pre-dawn sky, the other morning. I could see the four little moons of Jupiter with my telescope. The size of Jupiter's disk is increasing slightly. It goes from 37 to 39 arc seconds this month. So early risers, or late stayers, uppers, should be able to spot the equatorial bands in the atmosphere and the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. If the timing is right, you may also see the Great Red Spot, which appears to be getting somewhat smaller at the present time, which is interesting. Well, quickly to Saturn. This month, Saturn actually passes behind the Sun on the 18th of November, so really is not going to be visible to us for virtually the whole month. It might just be visible at the very end of the month, rising about 1 hour before the Sun on the 30th. But best to wait a while. It'll become a pre-dawn object as time goes by. Now, Mercury is having a very favourable apparition in the pre-dawn skies, partly the latter part of October, and now, in fact, the best on the very 1st of November, when it reaches what is called greatest elongation west of the Sun. It lies some 18 degrees in angle away. With a magnitude of minus 0.5, which actually is quite bright, it'll be some 15 degrees above the horizon at sunrise. It will have an angular size of about 7 arc seconds and a phase of about 50%. So it's sort of half illuminated. You'll need a good low horizon in the east-southeast to spot it. But in fact, when you do, you should be able to see it with your unaided eye. But please do not try and observe it once the Sun has risen. Mercury then, of course, begins to drop back towards the horizon as it nears the Sun, its size dropping to about 5 arc seconds by the 15th, as it goes towards the end of this rather nice apparition. Mars has been around for a very long time. It's now moving eastwards relative to the stars in the constellation of Sagittarius and can be seen very low in the southwest just after sunset. It's dimming from magnitude plus 0.9 to plus 1, and its angular size is falling from 5.5 to 5.2 arc seconds. So you're not going to see any detail on the surface, just this sort of salmon pink colour. Sagittarius is full of wonderful objects, and so as Mars passes through the constellation, it passes quite close to several Messier objects. It passes the globular cluster M28 on the 2nd, M22 on the 6th, and is moving towards M75 by the end of the month. And finally, Venus. Well, Venus passed behind the Sun on the 26th of October, so we will really have to wait until next month when it will become an evening object. I suspect it might just be visible after sunset during the last week of the month. What about some highlights? Quite a few this month, actually. November the 1st to the 8th. Mercury is in fact lying above Spica in Virgo. On the 1st, it's just 5 degrees above, a little to the left of Spica. And again, as I've said, you need a good low horizon in the east-southeast and possibly the use of binoculars to spot it. Interestingly, on November the 4th, between about 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock UT, the Moon skims just above the planet Uranus. At 5 o'clock, Uranus is just 2 arc minutes, and that's not much, and that varies a bit across the UK, below the Moon's limb. It's then twilight, so I suspect it would be hard to spot, unless perhaps you've got a telescope which you've actually locked on to the position of Uranus. But over the next 45 minutes, as darkness falls, it should become easier to spot. By 5:30, the separation will have increased to 6 arc minutes, and by 6 o'clock, 19 arc minutes. The disk, at 3.3 arc seconds across, is tiny, but one should be able to spot its rather lovely turquoise colour. On November the 14th, an hour before sunrise, Jupiter is quite close to a third quarter moon. On the same day, 1 hour after sunset, Mars will be seen just above the teapot of Sagittarius. Again, little charts are shown on the night sky page. And then on the mornings of the 17th and 18th, after midnight, so that is the early morning of the 17th and 18th, the Earth passes close to the trails of cometary debris from Comet Temple-Tuttle, and these produce the annual Leonid meteor shower. The good news is that this year the meteor shower occurs near the time of new moon, so its light will not hinder our view. But the less good news is that the meteor shower is much weaker than around the time of the millennium, and perhaps only a dozen meteors might be spotted per hour. And the best time to observe them will be after midnight, as our hemisphere is then facing the stream of cometary debris. As the name implies, the radiant of the shower, which is where the meteors appear to radiate from, lies within the head or sickle of the constellation Leo the Lion. On November the 25th and 26th, an hour after sunset, Mars can be seen close to a thin crescent moon. As I've said, it's lying up to the left of the teapot in Sagittarius. On the 25th, it'll be about 10 degrees to the left of a very thin, 3-day-old crescent moon, whilst on the 26th, a day later, it will lie some 7 degrees below a fuller crescent moon. So quite a lot to look at this month. Good hunting.
Kia ora and welcome to the November Jodcast from Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. Mars continues to hold its position in our western evening sky this month, moving through the constellation of Sagittarius as the stars slip westwards behind it. It is now the only planet in our evening sky and will set after around midnight. As we continue on our inside orbit, Mars is moving further and further away from us and will appear as just a tiny red dot in a small telescope this month. At the end of the month, Mars is joined briefly by Venus, making a slow rise above the southwestern horizon. Venus will set just 50 minutes after the Sun at the end of November, but it's such a bright object that it may be briefly visible, low down in the evening twilight sky. The planet will gradually set later and later after the Sun as we move through the end of 2014 and the first half of next year, to become a spectacular evening object by mid-2015. In contrast, bright Jupiter is rising earlier and earlier in our morning skies, by around 3 a.m. towards the beginning of the month and by 1 a.m. at the end. Look out for Jupiter's four largest moons, Io, Europa, Ganymede and Callisto, which can be seen with binoculars moving from side to side as they orbit the planet. As Scorpius or Temato Amaui sets in the west, his arch-enemy and our summer constellation, Orion, rises towards the east along with Taurus and Canis Major. The bright star Antares, which marks the heart of the Scorpion, is also known as Rehuatamauri. It represents one of the four po, or pillars, that hold Ranganui, the sky farther up in the sky. It sits just above the southwestern horizon at around 11 p.m. at the beginning of the month. These four po form the basis of a celestial compass, a map of the night sky, that was used to navigate the vast oceans of our planet and bring our ancestors to Aotearoa, New Zealand. The other three po are marked by Matariki, the Pleiades, Tohutohu, the Belt of Orion, and Takarua, or Sirius, which line up along the eastern horizon. Matariki supports one of Rangi's shoulders and marks the rising point of the sun at the winter solstice. Takarua, or Sirius, supports the other shoulder and is the closest bright star to the sun's rising point at the summer solstice. These two stars represent the extent of the sun's movement throughout the year. In between and rising directly east is Totoro, or the Belt of Orion, marking the rising point of the sun at the time of the equinox. Stretching from Scorpius around to Orion is Te Waka o Tamariri, or Tamariri's canoe, which lines up along the horizon in our evening sky. The front of the canoe is represented by the tail of Scorpius, or Te Waka o Marirangi, while Totohu marks the stern.
The Southern Cross is the anchor Te Punga, and the pointers are the anchor line Te Tova. The key seasonal markers of Takarua, Sirius, and Rehua Antares are on either side. One story tells of Tamariri sailing across the sky in his waka with all the stars in kete or baskets. He places the key seasonal and navigational stars in their correct positions in the sky, but finds he has lots of smaller stars left over. So he capsizes his waka, spilling all the smaller stars into the sky, forming Te Ikaroa, or the Milky Way. The sky we see in the mid-evening in October-November each year is in fact the same sky we see just before sunrise around June, the time we celebrate Matariki or Maori New Year. It is said that the bright star Canopus or Atutahi, the Ariki or High Chief of the Heavens, pulls up the anchor at the start of the year, beginning the waka in motion. During the year, you can track the progress of Tamariri's waka as it moves across the sky, one day at a time. Canopus is the second brightest star in the nighttime sky, with a magnitude of -0.7, and the brightest in the southern constellation of Carina. It is a white F-type supergiant with a mass around 10 times that of our sun. It can be seen midway up the southeastern evening sky this month. A little higher and further towards the south, you may be able to spot two small, fuzzy patches of light, easily seen with the naked eye on a dark, moonless night. These are the large and small Magellanic Clouds, two small, irregular dwarf galaxies that neighbour our own. Whilst these galaxies are much smaller than the Milky Way, they still contain billions of stars. The Large Magellanic Cloud, or LMC, is the lower of the two and is located 160,000 light-years away. Through binoculars or a small telescope, you may be able to spot a number of young star clusters, visible as small patches of light. The LMC contains one of the largest and brightest star formation regions known, called the Tarantula Nebula, or 30 Doradus. Spanning around 600 light-years across and covering 13 arc-minutes in the sky, the Tarantula Nebula contains over 800,000 stars and protostars, and is the most active starburst region identified within our own local group of galaxies. If it were placed at the same distance as the Orion Nebula, it would be so bright that it would cast a shadow here on Earth. The star formation activity within the Tarantula Nebula began a few tens of millions of years ago, and some of the largest and brightest stars born within this region have already reached the ends of their short lives. In February 1987, supernova SN1987A was discovered in the outskirts of the Tarantula Nebula by astronomers at Las Campanas Observatory in Chile and independently by prolific amateur astronomer Albert Jones here in New Zealand. This supernova was the closest since the invention of the telescope just over 400 years ago, and provided a unique opportunity for astronomers to study such an event in unprecedented detail. Reaching a peak magnitude of around 3, supernova 1987A was easily bright enough to spot with the naked eye. Smaller and more distant than the LMC, at around 200,000 light-years, is the Small Magellanic Cloud, or SMC. To the top right of this galaxy, you may spot a faint, fuzzy star. This object is not actually associated with the SMC, but is a beautiful globular cluster located just a tenth of the distance away on the outskirts of our own galaxy. At magnitude 4.9, it is the second brightest globular cluster in the sky after Omega Centauri, and can be easily seen with the naked eye. With binoculars or a small telescope, it is a wonderful sight, revealing a densely packed central core, whilst a larger telescope will start to resolve some of its millions of ancient stars. Look out for the Leonid meteor shower, which peaks around the 17th of the month, when the Earth passes through the trail of dust and debris left behind by the comet Temple-Tuttle. Whilst normally a reliable but fairly quiet meteor shower, observers have noticed that roughly every 33 years, the number of meteors observed during the shower show a marked increase as the Earth passes through the denser parts of the cometary debris trail. Whilst the 2014 shower is not expected to reach these high levels, it does occur around the time of a waning crescent moon, making viewing conditions much better than 2013. The radiant of the shower, from which the meteors appear to originate, is located in the constellation of Leo, which rises only a couple of hours before the sun in our morning sky. The best time to observe the Leonids is about 3 hours before sunrise on the mornings around the peak. Wishing you clear skies from the team here at Carter Observatory.